Welcome to the Morning Mix. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. It is Friday, February 8th, 2013. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today we spend the hour with Ken Burrows and special guests on the Gandhi King Season for Nonviolence, a 64-day educational and grassroots campaign dedicated to demonstrating that nonviolence is a powerful way to transform and empower our lives. We also welcome to the show Mitch Hall, a children's rights advocate, yoga teacher, and peace scholar who will address why gun control is not enough, underlying causes and remedies for direct violence. During the second half of the show, we'll interview Renee Sole, who teaches nonviolent communications at San Quentin State Prison, and we speak with two San Francisco State University students, Nick Rogoff and Vonique Strickland. Welcome back to the Morning Mix. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today, we spend the hour with Ken Burrows and special guests on the Gandhi King Chavez Season for Nonviolence for 2013. This is a 64-day series that goes on, and Ken Burrows has been doing this for a number of years at San Francisco State University. He's a Peter's going to introduce him more formally here in a moment. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about what this whole series was. It's beginning January 30th, ending April 4th. It's 64 days of practice applying principles of love and wisdom to daily life. So we're going to get into great detail here about the series, about its mission, about a series of weekly speakers. And again, we have a number of wonderful guests today to talk to us about the importance of nonviolence and really to highlight nonviolence as an important narrative that's missing from a lot of the dialogue that takes place in the United States. So here's Peter to introduce Ken and our first guest for the hour, Mitch Hall.
Our guest, one of our guests today is Ken Burrows. He's a holistic health faculty member at San Francisco State since 1991. He's the founder of the Holistic Health Learning Center, where he serves as a faculty advisor for interns and produces the Holistic Health Network. He does a healthcare conference every year. Part of that is a nonviolent conference. It's ongoing now. His primary research involves the evolution of consciousness and cultures, which foster nonviolence, creativity, and human virtues. Also joining us online is Mitch Hall, is a wellness counselor at the Community Health for American Asians in Richmond, where he provides psychosocial assessments and counseling underprivileged children and caregivers for diverse backgrounds with history of trauma and multiple mental health issues. He's also a yoga teacher and in Berkeley, and he teaches weekly classes in Raja Yoga, entailing meditation, mindful breathing, movement, stretching, and chanting. He's a faculty member of the Yoga Therapist Training and Yoga for Youth Training Programs. He's also the former dean at the School of Humanities at New College. Mitch, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Well, welcome, and welcome, Ken.
Good morning.
Ken, let's start with you. Tell us the main idea of bringing stronger nonviolent philosophies into our culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an obvious need to bring nonviolence into our culture, given the violence we see on an almost daily basis now. It's become almost a trademark of our culture around the world. We're known as increasingly violent. Anything from personal violence to our police forces and so on. So this particular focus of the Season for Nonviolence is framed between the assassination dates of Gandhi, which is January 30th, and King, which is April 4th. And this nine-week period becomes a period of educational practice and personal practice. And we focus on a threefold path to peace, so-called, which is Gandhi named it the Evolutionary Revolution. These 64 days integrate the personal, the social, and the political aspects of day-to-day life that we might begin to literally transform the system by transforming and healing our own lives, our families, our institutions, and our communities, and that alone and together we increasingly become the change that we seek. So we practice, this is our 11th year to do this on campus, to really break this into three windows of practice, this threefold path. Personal practice for the first 3 weeks. The second 3 weeks we focus on our relationships with each other and our community. And finally, the last 3 weeks we focus on our relationship with the world and our activism in the world.
Well, Ken Burrows, just want to give listeners a little bit broader overview here about what's coming up so that people that want to get involved, that they can, people can come to these mini events.
Absolutely. It's publicly oriented. It's all free. And there are a number of every week we have something happening.
And this is San Francisco State University. The events are all on Mondays from 5:30 to 7 in HSS building, right? That's HSS right. building 306, unless it's noted otherwise. Right. Just want to give listeners a quick overview. You started with the overview of Teachings of Gandhi and Nonviolent Living on February 11. You had Mitch Hall. We're going to turn to Mitch Hall here momentarily. Mm-hmm. Why Gun Control is Not Enough, Four Underlying Causes and Remedies for Violence. That seems sadly timely. Mitch, we're going to turn to you to talk about that very in one moment. On the 18th of February, you have Laughter Yoga. Mm-hmm. On February 25th, you have Nonviolent Social Action Training, a film, The Force More Powerful. On March 4, you have Introduction to Nonviolent Communication with Renee Soleil, who joins us later on this morning.
Right.
March 11th, you have Rethinking Money and Banking. That's incredibly important, and I know that you've riffed on that theme for a number of years in Project Censored books. Very important thing to be considering. Building a We the People movement is March 18th to revitalize community and democracy. April 8th is closing celebration on rethinking education and activism. And we just talked about that not long ago on air with Adam Bessie and others, and we'll certainly touch on that a little bit this morning. And into April 22nd, you have urban permaculture, ecological living. But the interesting thing here is you tie all of these together as a season for nonviolence, as ways of nonviolent living.
That's true. And just to mention also with this next week that's coming, it isn't just Mitch Hall, but also Isaac Silberman, who is a neurologist and psychiatrist. They'll be in dialogue together. We feel it's important to keep drowning the sciences as well as the arts, and then bring the dialogue of both aspects into our community. And yes, every week we're doing something and framing this whole idea of nonviolence. Nonviolence is actually a fairly current word. It's a relatively new word in English and is not even found in many dictionaries. It came into vogue in the 20s with Gandhi's work, and is increasingly becoming understood, but still it's very misunderstood as just not being violent, rather than a whole principled nonviolent approach to activism, which is quite different, about the refusal to go along with injustice when you see it and beginning to be a force for change and an active change in the direction of your lives and actually organized action to make a difference. So,
Mitch Hall, you're a counselor with children who have had histories of trauma.
Yes.
And we've asked the question, you know, why gun control is not enough. Certainly there's a national debate right now about gun control and the causes of violence. What are the underlying causes and remedies for direct violence in our society?
Well, I just want to emphasize that we don't want the gun control lobby to look at our examination of underlying causes as a justification for them to that we're not justifying. We think gun control is absolutely necessary, but not sufficient. The literature reviews are pretty clear that childhood maltreatment and neglect lead to a disposition to acting out through direct violence. The cold, predatory, remorseless killers that that plot their actions, and many of whom are even found in governments and corporate positions of power, often come out of backgrounds of severe childhood neglect, and they don't form normal, healthy attachments to other human beings. The sort of impulsive, reactive, violent actors often come out of severe abuse. And this does not mean that everyone who's neglected or abused will turn out to be violent. Far from it. In fact, it's very difficult to turn people into killers. There are many, many factors in developmental history, in the societal structures, and in the cultural ambience that affect that. In World War II, the U.S. military found that only 15% to 20% of soldiers would actually fire their weapons at exposed enemies on the other side. And so they had to change their training methods to make it more likely that normal human beings would want to kill others who who never did them any harm other than being in a harmful situation. So there are many, many, there's a ton of research literature that's very poorly understood about, one, the childhood roots of a disposition to violence, two, the structural ones, that is, the unjust laws and policy that privilege elites and that underprivilege the many, and we know the world is getting more unequal. So if 1.5 million people, according to some estimates, are killed per year by direct violence, 18 million are killed by structural violence, those harmful inequalities that lead to excess death and humiliation. I'll stop and pause and ask for more questions.
Can you talk to us, Mitch Hall, a little bit more about what people could expect on February 11th? This coming Monday, you're going to be speaking at San Francisco State University, and Ken Burroughs, our other guest, said you were speaking with Isaac Silberman. Can you talk a little bit about what might you be going into detail about? We want to try to get more people to come out and participate in this, because certainly the underlying message here, why gun control is not enough, it's as if, again, in our culture, particularly with the corporate media that's a megaphone of various interests of the 1%, really doesn't foster a dialogue of, by, and for the people, and it doesn't really build understanding within our communities. So what might you be touching on Monday? And then, Ken, let's have you jump back in and talk about that.
Good. Well, I have a slideshow, and I have to just limit the number of slides, but I'll be looking at the different levels of violence and nonviolence, direct, structural, and cultural, environmental as well. I'll be looking at child abuse and neglect, all those forms of maltreatment, and the research literature, doing a quick review through the slides of the amazing findings. I'll be looking at the cultural geography of violence and how we can predict which cultures are more or less violent. We'll look at the status of children in U.S. culture, and UNICEF says we're next to the bottom of all the, you know, industrialized and post-industrial democracies in terms of child welfare. And I'll be looking at the correlations between the 1% versus the 99%, and how, for example, it's been tracked since the 1970s, for every 1% in unemployment, we see a correlation of a 6% increase in incarceration and murder rates in this country. We'll look at the culture of violence and nonviolence. We'll look a little bit, and I think Ike Silberman will do more of that, of the genetics or epigenetics of violence. And my review of the research is that there's not a genetic, there's a genetic risk factor for violence, but given if children are raised in nurturing families and if the environing society has social structures and policies that provide for the basic needs and don't stress out the parents who are raising them, then a person, even with the genetic risk factor, doesn't become violent. There's even a famous neuroscientist who found he had the risk factors and he had an ancestry in which there was violence, but he didn't turn out violent. He had a loving mom. So I'll be looking at the research literature and opening up to dialogue. We'll also consider gender oppression and inequalities. And, you know, the irresponsible use of psychotropic medications on juveniles. Psychotropic medications, antidepressants, anti-anxiety, and so on, were never tested on children, and yet they're being given massively to children, vast profits for the pharmaceutical corporations and everything. And the psychologist Daria Brzezinski found the startling fact that 100% of the mass school killers, juveniles themselves, had all either been on psychotropic medications or withdrawing from them at the time. Again, these are correlations. They're not, we can't prove cause and effect at this point. But since children had never been tested on these medications, it's alarming how, you know, the profits of the few and the way that there's a breakdown in the bonds of human nurturance in this society. In terms of supporting nonviolence, the research is very clear that well-nurtured, securely attached children that get plenty of adult and parental affection, care, attention, guidance, develop more empathy, more dispositions to nonviolence, more tolerance for diversity, more compassion and care, and so on. And there are, and we'll be looking at educational programs, at social policies and structures that can help to transform this very violent society and culture into a nonviolent one. But it calls for a massive reorientation. I'll be looking at the World Health Organization's policies. They have wonderful papers.
Mitch Hall, we're going to have to put you on a feedback loop because the last 2 minutes of what you just said, if that were repeated over and over in our culture,
exactly.
People, you know, maybe that reorientation would perhaps have a seed to from which to spring. That's really critical. Peter?
Let's frame this perhaps in the real world a bit. We're looking at a global empire of military domination. The United States is using drones to kill people all over the world. We have special forces on the ground in over 100 countries. And in addition to that, we have 2 million people in prison, a prison complex, and massive inequality, as Mitch talked about, throwing some drugs into that as the factors. Is this doable? I mean, can we make a cultural transformation, or are we just, is it just so overwhelming that it isn't really possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a great question. Is peace really possible, and can we move in a direction toward the higher aspects of our nature versus the lower aspects? Well, evolutionary history shows us that these two primary modes of existence have been shown through human history and through prehistory over time. And perhaps the question is, for humanity, it seems to be, what brings out the worst in us and what brings out the best? And what typically brings those conditions that really elicit the worst in us have to do with extreme inequities and disparities, have to do with secrecy and evasion of accountability, and the awareness of that within the culture that begins to seep through, the scapegoating and blaming of others. And all of this separation into us versus them begins to create camps, and we begin to objectify each other and elicit really some of the worst in human behaviors. But likewise, we can begin to move toward collaborative evolution, which is the second option for humanity. We can find those behaviors that bring out the best in us, cooperation, fairness, mutual accountability, open imagination and creativity. So it's really up to us to find our ways to feed the appropriate aspects of our own nature. And at times it seems obviously very challenging when the other aspects seem to loom large and loud.
So, Ken Burroughs, where can people, before we continue on our discussion here, we're going to bring Mitch Hall back in for a few moments before we break at the bottom of the hour for a few final statements and move on. We have some other guests. But can you tell people where they could find out more information about not just this series, but the things that you're talking about? Because, again, one of the points that we're bringing up here in my quip about putting Mitch Hall on that two-minute feedback loop, people don't hear these kinds of messages very often in our culture, in our media. Mm-hmm. We are bombarded with many different messages, right, that kind of guide what the conversation is. What would you tell people about where to get some more information? Obviously going to this series and participating in the series. Mm-hmm. So could you tell people maybe where to find information about that and a few other places?
You bet. Well, first of all, our own at the university, we've been developing a library for almost 2 decades now devoted to the integration of the world's wisdom traditions. Part of our problem is we don't have a clear moral story that we can all agree upon, both left and right and every place between. So we've been actively creating what a holistic paradigm, a sense of integrating these perceptions, each of them having their own strengths and purposes, might look like. And how do we hold space for appropriate conflict? Conflict is really not violence. Fierce belief is not violence. Those are very different directions. How might we come together and really hold the space of creative tension for what might emerge? And this has been the focus of our writing and a chapter that I and Dr. Michael Nagler wrote in our latest book for Project Censored. How do we really honor creative tension that comes with democracy and really honor the differences that show up between us? So we've been focused on this for many years, and to bring it into our programs and also into a very rare program that we have on our own campus where we teach holistic studies and holistic health studies to really support this integration. And I believe we'll be finishing up today looking at the very topic of rethinking education, which is very much in that direction as well.
Mitch Hall, we have just a little over a minute left. Tell us about your therapies that you do with children who have experienced trauma. And is this massively needed in society?
Oh, it certainly is. I think the restaging of trauma is also one of the features in violence, whether direct or that imposed by these elites who have turned off their capacity for empathy and compassion. And I've worked with kids who have been gang members, who were jumped into gangs by uncles, who did horrific things to kids. I've also worked with the victims of violence who need a lot of attention. I worked with a girl whose boyfriend was murdered just a few yards away from her, and what was a setup, and a decent kid who had gotten out of the gangs and so on. And these kids are suffering. These were all the kids I've worked with have been, you know, on public assistance programs. Their families are underprivileged. They mostly come from different minority groups and so on. We need it on a massive scale. I think, you know, one encouraging thing that there's been an initiative to bring mindfulness and yoga into schools and so on, and I'm with the Nairoga Institute that we have, you know, 30-some classes a week in Alameda County Juvenile Justice Center. We're going into the schools with highly at-risk populations, and we find that the mindfulness practice, particularly the yoga that involves mindful awareness, breathing and movement, helps build, and the neuroscientists are clear on this, it helps build the same circuits in the brain that would have been built had there been secure attachment in the beginning. And at least we're giving kids the ability to cope with stress and with their alarm reactions and to find alternatives, nonviolent alternatives to either fighting or fleeing or just freezing up and, you know, going within, withdrawing. So the kids I've worked with have benefited with both the talk therapy, but also I bring them the breath practice, the yoga and so on, you know, in a clinical context. And I found that's been really transformational.
That's the voice of Mitch Hall, youth counselor, yoga teacher, peace scholar. You can learn more at breathepeacefully.com. Mitch Hall will be joined by Isaac Silberman at San Francisco State University Monday, February 11th, 5:30 to 7 o'clock, HSS 306. Ken Burrows, of course, will be there. And Mitch Hall, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. So I'm off? Okay.
Good to have you. We'll try to have you back sometime.
I look forward to it, Mickey and Peter. Thank you so much.
We're going to continue our morning discussing a season for nonviolence. Ken Burrows will stay with us. We'll also hear from nonviolent communications expert Renee Soleil, and we'll also hear from students about this program, Nick Rogoff and Vonique Strickland. But before we do that, we have an announcement and some wonderful music by Preston Reed. Please stay with us.
Coming up on Thursday, February 21st in Oakland, the untold history of the United States. Join Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick at the Grand Lake Theater and see an excerpt from their Showtime series, The Untold History of the United States.
Following the film, Stone and Kuznick will be joined in conversation by famed whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. Thursday, February 21st at the Grand Lake Theater, 7 p.m., $10 at the door. The event is wheelchair accessible. This is a benefit for Project Censored and KPFA. For more information about the untold history of the United States with Oliver Stone, see projectcensored.org.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Tune in Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, for a provocative interview with Nina Hartley. She's a registered nurse, but you all may be more interested in her adult industry career. Still going strong over some 30 years, Nina also has a line of instructional videos, and her book is called Nina Hartley's Guide to Total Sex. She is articulate and humorous and passionate. That's Love, Lust, and Laughter. Tune in this Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, it's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on BRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from BRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Despite what you might have heard, diabetes is not a lifelong condition. I'm Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food. This Tuesday at 4 p.m., I will be speaking with my favorite physician, New York Times best-selling author, Dr. Joel Fuhrman. We'll be talking about his newest book, The End of Diabetes. Over 25 million children and adults in the United States have diabetes today. If you know anyone who is diabetic, please let them know about this program. It just may save their life. It's All About Food, this Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, I'm Sandy Leon Best, host of Political Analysis. Welcome to the 21st century, where the corporate propaganda machine works 24/7 to manufacture your reality. Every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Political Analysis challenges the corporate narrative with independent news, analysis, and passionate conversations on the most critical issues of our time. Don't let the corporate echo machine become your truth. Tune in live to Political Analysis or visit the archives at prn.fm. If you like the show, rate us in iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
This is Dr. Jack Rasmus, your host for the Alternative Vision Show on the Progressive Radio Network. Join me next Wednesday, February 13th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, when I and my guests discuss the upcoming March 1st sequester deficit cuts, and specifically the developments in Washington, D.C. right now to exempt much of defense spending from the cuts. We'll talk about grassroots efforts to stop this. That's the Alternative Vision Show this Wednesday, February 13th, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Join me.
Hi, this is Maria Heller, host of the Maria Heller Show, heard at MariaMeria.net 4 days a week. But every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern, you get to hear one of the best shows of the week on the Maria Heller Show right here on PRN.fm. If you missed a show, they're archived right here on site at PRN. Support Real Truth in Media by tuning in and sharing the information you hear with anyone that'll listen. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Richard Martin from The Wake Up Call, and this coming Friday, I'm going to spend some time trying to show you how the government and the media are conspiring to fool you into spending money you should absolutely not be spending. These people are not your friends. Their agenda has nothing whatever to do with you or your best interests. You are simply pawns in their game of enriching others at your expense. So why not make it a date? The Wake Up Call on Friday, February the 15th at 2 p.m. here on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Peter Roth, host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM, noon on Saturdays Eastern Time. I interview the most fascinating people who are leaders in transformation at this most enlightening time of evolution. Here's what Gary Null had to say about my show.
One of the most esoteric and interesting and insightful programs we have because it's based upon exploring human potential and human mysteries, especially people who are using higher faculties.
If you don't catch a live show, you can listen to the always available archives. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
This is Mike Bader, host of The Turning Point and Occupied Territory, and you're listening to PRN.FM, your very best source for progressive programming.
Thank you.
back to the Morning Mix Show. This is Project Censor, and I'm Peter Phillips with Mickey Huff. Our next guest is Renee Soule. She's been a leading teaching nonviolent communication at San Quentin Prison for over 4 years. She holds a master's degree from Sonoma State in wilderness psychology. She's an eco-psychologist, which revives an ancient approach to healing that lives with the fertile confluence of how people, nature, and culture meet. Renee, is it a challenge? I mean, if you're teaching nonviolent communications in San Quentin, how does that work? Is that a challenge? And what kinds of successes are you having?
Well, I wanted to teach nonviolent communication in San Quentin in part because nonviolent communication works with a direct experience of life having to do with feelings and needs. And what nonviolent communication does is connect that no matter what we're doing, no matter what we've done, and any kind of crazy things that are going around us in the world, whatever we're doing is the purpose of it is to meet some need. And if we can get to that basic motivation and understand each other from that place, then we'll have a connection that connects our humanity. And one of the shadow sides of nonviolent communication is that if we are only thinking about our needs and we're thinking we're going to get our needs met if we can do this practice correctly, then that's not really what nonviolent communication is about. It's really about connecting to people and finding out what our deeper motivations are, no matter what we appear to be doing or thinking or even saying, and then to find a way to connect with that and then maybe find a different strategy to use. And so one of the reasons I went to San Quentin Prison, actually there's many reasons, but one of them is because I wanted to work in a place where people's needs are not being met readily, and to figure out a way to use nonviolent communication that really preserved our humanity and preserved our vision of the world and what it is we know is true for ourselves, even if our environment is not reflecting that directly. And so it was really about freedom in places where freedom is not always possible.
But Renee Soule, so you've been teaching it for 7 years.
Yes,
there, mm-hmm. Nonviolent communication. I just wanted to touch on something very briefly, and Ken Burroughs, you're still with us for the remainder of the show, and I've heard Ken speak about this numerous times. You mentioned shadow side. Can you briefly explain what you mean when you say that to people?
About NVC? Well, I mean, not everyone would agree with me, perhaps, but there's something about a practice of nonviolence that is directly, you know, is talking about feelings and needs, but that doesn't mean that we get to go through the world getting all of our needs met all the time. And those of us who are visionaries, for example, we have certain needs for each other and for the world that are not always realizable. But we have to hold on to our vision to know what's possible, what Ken had said before, to the parts of human nature that truly are possible. And if we are able to connect with people on that level, even if their actions are not reflecting their deepest possibilities underneath that, even if it's a violent act, if you were to look really deeply underneath what that action's about, you might see that it is about protection or safety or about some kind of honor or dignity that they're wanting to defend. And if they could connect on that level, then we could figure out another way, perhaps, to meet that same need, but in a way that really meets the needs of other people around them. So it brings more creativity into the system. But the dark side, of course, is like you don't get to walk around and say, well, my need is this, and I've got a certain way to do it, and you better do it now. It's sort of about, you know, nonviolent communication is about connecting with needs and then figuring out creative solutions and not demands about how things should be.
We have two students from San Francisco State University joining us as well. Nick Rogoff has stepped forward. He co-leads a nonviolent training effort with other students who've had past violence in their lives and his. And also Vaughn Strickland, who's a journalism student and very involved in Project Censored and the nonviolent movement there. Nick, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Tell us about your efforts at San Francisco State and what you're learning there.
Sure. Well, I first experienced the power of nonviolence in high school. We're on the anniversary of the assassination of King. There was a racial violence that was largely ignored by the school and admin. But by joining together with other students and forming a coalition against violence that was really rooted within the principles of King, that we achieved district-wide set of rules and regulations on hate crimes. So my biggest interest in participating in the Season for Nonviolence is to show students that as students and even as human beings, that we do have the power to empower ourselves and each other in a way that makes us all equals, and that together we can, in fact, take a stand against violence and in ending it by choosing to live and practice nonviolence as a way of life. And one way that I carry this vision is through the Holistic Healing Circle that Vonique and I co-founded along with another intern, where we cultivate nonviolence on a personal, social, and spiritual level by creating a safe and sacred space for meaningful conversation and practices that are centered on peace and healing of the body, mind, soul, and shadow to achieve harmony and balance within and around us while creating a community and a culture, really, where we can live in the truth that we are one and that all life is one.
Nick, could you briefly tell us what high school were you just talking about? Where you first experienced this and you experienced this act and that it sort of impelled you on this path?
Yeah, it was at Rodriguez High School.
Which is?
In Fairfield.
Vaughn, you're involved at San Francisco State University with Project Censored, a journalism student. From that standpoint, how do you see the power of journalism and in terms of messaging and in terms of communicating these kinds of messages with people, the kind of things that Nick was just talking about?
Well, media has a powerful way of expressing a certain opinion about any issue. And I believe that it's media's objective to educate people on nonviolence and different ways of communication. So with me getting involved with Project Censored, actually have a military background and a martial arts background. So I really wanted to educate myself on different ways to cope with PTSD and just things that I've seen through deployment. So getting involved in journalism and then Project Censored, to me, it was just the next step. So I really wanted to cultivate what Nick and I have brought with the Healing Circle into Project Censored so we create a meaningful place for conversation with not just our personal lives, but with the media as well.
Ken Burrows, let's bring you back into the mix here momentarily. You work with Vaughn and Nick at San Francisco State University. So could you chime in a little bit about this and sort of your direction and how you see this? This is a very important part of education. I know you alluded to earlier that we'd be talking about rethinking education. Well, this is redoing, right?
Absolutely.
It's not just rethinking, it's redoing.
Absolutely. I feel very fortunate to have students such as Vaughn and Nick and many others in our program. We're actually the world's largest program looking at holistic approaches to healing self and culture. And we have 800 to 900 students every semester in our classes, so we're not small. And we've been looking for years at how do we not just fix things, but really how do we heal systems? How do we really do the harder cultural work of a whole different type of learnings? How do we approach the healing process? It's a very systemic reality. It's multiple aspects to it. And we keep wondering, we'll be finishing up this season for nonviolence by really looking at what is the role of educators in the time of great social change, such as the time we're in? What does relevant schooling really look like? And certainly it includes a look at being less violent and moving toward those constructive aspects of our nature and learning how to hold the creative tension of diversity that's within our culture. So we'll be ending up with this season and our 9 weeks by actually holding a community conversation with thought leaders that we invite to the table and, of course, students and faculty to really hold this conversation and talk about what is relevant education look like for the 21st century. And it certainly has something to be with becoming social artists, because art and the skills such as those that Renee was mentioning have to do with awakening our imagination and really integrating our diversity and making it real to all of us that each of these aspects has some unique and specific importance.
Let's go back to Nick. Nick, yeah. You co-lead nonviolent effort sessions with other students. What happens in this process?
Well, we come together. We basically create sacred space together where we can feel comfortable to share and to learn. And through many different practices, and meaningful conversations and meditation, we come to a space where we can learn about ourselves, we can learn about each other, and really cultivate practices that we can live by, and that by doing so really is living a life that is nonviolent.
By sacred, I don't think you mean religious in any way. Are you more referring to sort of the natural human spirit of caring and empathy for other human beings?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely sacred in that context. That by living that our lives are sacred, and that this act of nonviolence is something that's really essential.
And Vaughn, you come from a military background, a martial arts background, and yet you're totally involved in this and really see this as a future for society. How has your life changed, and how has this impacted you?
Well, it's completely healed me. Actually, needed martial arts to heal from the military, and I ended up needing yoga and meditation to heal from practicing martial arts physically, because it's very physically demanding. But more than anything, both communities gave me a support network and a support group. And one of Gandhi's principles for nonviolence is that of oneness. And I'm quoting him when I say, our oneness calls us to work for the well-being of all. So when we feel we're part of a community and we feel that we're part of something, we want to protect that. And I believe we need more positive and supportive communities, whether you're part of a basketball group or a book club, or, you know, you just get together and watch Super Bowl or football during the weekends. That group and that community you can lean back on, and you can come for support if you're in a violent situation or you're contemplating thoughts that might be negatively impactful to people around you.
That's the voice of Vaughn Strickland, a student at San Francisco State University, part of the Project Censored group there, a journalism student, works with Ken Burroughs. Ken Burroughs, of course, is still with us from San Francisco State University, working on his 11th season for Nonviolent Speakers series there. That's what we're talking about today. I'm Mickey Helf with Peter Phillips. This is the Project Censored show on the Morning Mix. And we're also, we were just joined by Nick Rogoff, who co-leads the student nonviolent efforts at San Francisco State University. So, Nick Rogoff, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
We also were joined by Renee Soule, a nonviolent communications expert who has been at San Quentin for 7 years teaching. She hasn't been at San Quentin for 7 years. But let's go back to Renee, and let's talk a little bit more about what you're going to be doing as part of this series. This is the Gandhi King Chavez season for nonviolence. That's what we've been speaking about all morning here on the Morning Mix Project Censored Show. These events are on Mondays from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at 8 HSS 306. And on March 4th, you're going to, Renee Soule, you're going to be talking about an introduction to nonviolent communication. So could you talk to us a little bit more specifically about what people can expect by coming out on to this event on March 4th? We want to get more people involved in this. We certainly need to have these types of dialogues on the community airwaves, because these are communications, these are themes in our communicating that they're not part of the corporate narrative. They're not part of the things that we turn. Vaughn mentioned getting together and watching the Super Bowl and so forth. But for many of us, corporate media is so ubiquitous. It's sort of this default zone where people connect, right? But what are they not connecting about particularly? And I think when you talk about nonviolent communication, you're talking about a whole different kind of paradigm of the way of thinking and communicating.
Well, that's exactly right. It's really about connecting. It's about what people are going to hopefully get if they come to this one evening on nonviolent communication is a taste of a different way of seeing the world that both affects your personal relationships and your one with relationship with yourself, which is very important, but also with your relationship with how you see the world. And for example, when Ken invited me to come on this show, I began to think about, from an NVC perspective, about censorship and about nonviolence. And I was thinking, well, God, what is the connection there, and how can this all fit together? And what NVC would ask is, what are the needs behind censorship? and what are the needs behind, there's a certain kind of censorship in the age of information which is particularly relevant to all of us, which is self-censorship. When there's information we really don't want to hear, we turn away from, or so what is it about information that we are filtering even when it comes towards us? And as an eco-psychologist, of course, I'm very interested in this because we're all connected to nature, and yet the belief or whatever in global warming is going up. It's like, what's going on here? So the denial and censorship lives in us, not just in the media around us. And so NVC might say, well, what are the feelings that are aroused by information that is uncomfortable? And there is one particular feeling that I, as an eco-psychologist, have been tracking for quite a while. That's the most uncomfortable feeling that a human can experience. And it's not anger, and it's not sadness. It's actually shame. And as we all know, it's all over the airwaves these days. But what we don't understand is shame as an affect. Like all other feelings, we don't have to be afraid of them, because if we connect with them deeply, they connect in their nature. There's triggers showing us that we have a need that's not being met. And so shame, like all feelings, is connecting to a need. And the needs behind shame are very interesting, because shame is the most recently evolved of all the affects. And it's the one that's only exists in social animals, complex social animals. So your snake might not experience shame, but your dog will. And hopefully you will too. So what an NVC, what we're trying to do is not to be afraid of feelings and not to be afraid of really what underlies them, because that's where life is. And the needs behind shame, just very briefly, and they're quite complex, but because they have to do with social relationships, they are all about belonging and healing what's been broken in our belonging. And so what could be more beautiful? And so when we have information that's uncomfortable, we may experience shame, and it's our work and our job to go underneath there and say, what are my needs? Why do I feel so uncomfortable? And then once we know what the need is, then that's when what Ken is saying, the imagination and the creativity can emerge. But when we're in the froth of feelings, sometimes that's not accessible to us, as we know.
Renee Sol, we often hear the reason for violence and corruption is that human beings are greedy. That's our human nature. And there's a massive amount of evidence that, no, we human beings evolved communally. We evolved sharing in tribal situations and protecting each other with empathy and concern. And that somehow gets modified in our current world and structure, that people get broken and they get corrupted. But it's not part of their nature, so to speak. Or they become shameful, as you're mm-hmm. saying. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, is this nonviolent training really returning to what human beings are attempting to define what our real natural roots are as human beings?
That's right. That's exactly right. Needs are life. Needs are what, you know, trees have needs, flowers have needs, birds do, we do too. And even if a person or ourselves, we find ourselves or another person acting greedy and we're thinking, oh my God, what's this greediness? It's crazy. But if you have a lens of nonviolent communication where you can sort of like x-ray vision, see what underlies that greed, see the feelings that underlie it. Because greed is a strategy, right? It's not a universal need. And it certainly is. So we can get addicted to strategies and forget what the deeper needs are underneath them. And the deeper needs underneath greed are probably, there's a lot of fear inside of greed, a sense of mistrust, a sense of perhaps not sense of belonging. And so people get, you know, attached to this strategy to want to have more and more and more, because we don't really know what the needs are that are underlying them. We don't connect with what we really, really want and what we very much deeply need. And maybe they go back a long way to early childhood issues. That's where my psychologist pops in. But sort of we have to do the healing work underneath this. And the whole purpose of NVC is to have compassion for each other and to make a connection that leads to creative solutions.
I have to ask this real quickly.
Yeah, please.
What do you mean by wilderness psychology?
Oh, well, that was way back in the day at Sonoma State with Robert Greenway, where we took people out for 2 weeks into nature and into the wild nature. And then we'd see what happened. And what we discovered is that culture is about 3 days deep. After about 3 days, things start to happen. And but from an NVC perspective, the deepest needs that people have in today's modern culture that are often not met are needs for community and a need for nature. And And if you drop a person with a group of people who are reasonably interesting and wild into a beautiful place, when those two basic needs are met for community and wild nature, then all the other sort of the deeper needs of how do we create this together and how do we create a healthy society begin to emerge, really quite naturally. And then we have a real adventure. Anyway, so wilderness psychology is the psychology of what the heck happened out there.
Well, at least an underlying part of that message is reconnecting to things that are visceral, real, you know, sort of actual communities and friends rather than virtual communities and friends. And again, that's not necessarily a slight against technologies. Technologies can bring us together in amazing ways, but they can also provide an illusion of connectivity.
Very much. What is it? I think Carolyn Casey calls them toxic mimics of real connections. And so we just have to be careful, not, you know, just be careful and realize what our true and deeper needs are and not let them be fulfilled by what appears to be a sort of like a pseudo gratification. And I don't mean to put down technology.
Well, right, and that's why I was prefacing that.
Here we
it's
are.
Not just, yeah, here we are technologically in a strange loop. Ken Burrows, we only have a couple minutes left this morning. The hour flies by, as always, quickly. And given that you know, you're one of the you are the organizer, and I know you work in large communities and circles here, and your speaker series clearly shows a season for nonviolence, Gandhi, King, Chavez. You have a whole series of events running 64 days. People can go online and find out at San Francisco State University website for the Holistic Health Center. But you also contributed, as you mentioned earlier, the creative tension of the emerging future, facing the seven challenges of humanity. You did some work with Michael Negler in Censored 2013, and I wanted to bring up this one point from it. Again, there are many others that people can check out, and you can go to the website projectcensored.org, where we want to post all of this work. Competing worldviews and polarity management. That's a real big one, and again, we're not going to tackle that in the next 90 seconds, but I did want to at least draw attention to this. You have a quote here from Gandhi: every conflict is one between different angles of vision illuminating the same truth. So I just thought maybe you could tease people a bit with some of that, kind of talk a little bit about that in terms of violent and nonviolent activism and communication as something that's going to come out in this speaker series you have.
You bet. Well, it's challenging, as Renee was saying, to enter the wilderness and knowing that culture is a few days deep. But meanwhile, we live from those stories, and they're competing stories of culture and the subcultures. So how do we listen to each other? How do we really hear each other across our differences and recognize the commonality that underlies all of that? And that's a big part of what we'll be doing this over the season, is to literally, how do we hold the creative tension of diversity? And how do we really acknowledge an educational approach that helps us recognize that despite the fact that we're spending, you know, much more than any other country in the world per child on education, having over doubled our educational expenses over the last 20 years, and yet the performance measures we have are all about STEM, about science, and the kinds of education tied to an economic structure. And meanwhile, our youth are increasingly depressed, facing violence and alienation and inequity, all the environmental pollution issues, all of that. So how do we enter into a different kind of education? We're talking about that over these 9 weeks that would really help empower students and help us acknowledge the commons that we're all from.
Ken Burrows, we're going to have to cut it off at the commons, and we can certainly, hopefully people will come and hear you and hear all of your wonderful guests and speakers on Monday nights at San Francisco State University for the season of nonviolence. You've been listening to the Project Censored show in the Morning Mix. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Special thanks to Wesley Burton and Anthony Fest for putting together, pulling together the technology behind the show. Certainly thanks to our guests Mitch Hall, Renee Soule, Nick Rogoff, Von Strickland, and also Ken Burrows. One quick announcement: we have the Untold History of the United States. Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick are coming to the Bay Area. There's a screening from their popular Showtime series, a Q&A, and a book signing. Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick will be in dialogue with Daniel Ellsberg. This is Thursday, February 21st, 7 p.m. at the Grand Lake Theater. $10 at the door. You can get advance tickets at GrandLakeTheater.com website. You can go to ProjectCensored.org for more information. We're out of time today. We'll see you next time.